You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
Hi, this is Michael Silverblatt, and welcome to Bookworm. I'm here today with Lynn Tillman, the author most recently of Motion Sickness, recently published by the Poseidon Press, author as well of Haunted Houses, and recently in paperback, her earlier and shorter pieces have been collected by Serpent's Tail Press in a book called Absence Makes the Heart. I'm going to begin by trying to describe Lynn Tillman, and after I fail, she'll correct me. Seems to me that in no other work that I know is the postmodern condition, as described by literary criticism, applied to daily life, so that your characters wander in a world that is truly postmodern and can only be understood by dimly understood postmodernist thinking. Is this in any way applicable?
Dimly postmodernist thinking. Yes, I think it is applicable. I think I place my characters in a certain kind of jeopardy, and there's always a questioning of identity and identity in relation to their own histories, and then the history, the larger history out of which they've been formed and propelled, in a sense.
Well, in Motion Sickness, for instance, it seems to me that the characters are trying to get through a world that perhaps other writers would describe as being susceptible to information overload or used to be entropy. At any rate, something has become overwhelming and wrong. It cannot be understood, and these characters sort of wander in the mid-space between Freud and Lacan. And what's more, they may or may not understand Lacan or Freud. But in other words, the tools may not even be adequate to the task of understanding a now impossibly overwhelming world.
The gap between what we experience and how we think about what we experience, I think, confronts each of those characters and each of us. In Motion Sickness, my project was to talk mostly about identity in relation to national identity, whereas in Haunted Houses I was very concerned to think about sexual identity. And I wanted to deal with, through what would seem to be a travel story, the kind of discontinuities of one's own existence, as well as the way one carries with one the history of the place that you're from, and that you can't really entirely lose that.
The remarkable thing, as I was saying to you in the car on a trip here full of motion sickness, that I can't think of any other writer who maintains the level of high theoretical considerations but is so simultaneously funny, A, and B, is capable, at least in The Village Voice, of being confused or compared to Joan Didion or Elizabeth Hardwick. I was wondering, I don't even know how to put it, but what's exciting about reading this book is that there is an aspect of it that is like gossip of the highest world order, you know?
I hope not the new world order. If that's hard, that's hard to. I'm just trying to think how to comment on that. I'm trying to deal with all kinds of information, although I hate using that word, I must say. All different kinds of ideas and images and thoughts that might come to the character, to one of us, and not kind of hierarchicalize different kinds of information or sensory data or whatever you want to call that.
The narrator of Motion Sickness by my guest Lynn Tillman is traveling through Europe and the Mideast a bit, and she seems to be the most recent example of a theme of the American novel, which, as you say, no woman calls the great American novel, the theme of the expatriate. The book begins with the heroine reading the portrait of a lady.
Yes.
By Henry James. The rapid travel and the short sentences bring to mind the Hemingway of The Sun Also Rises. The publisher, in a misguided frenzy, wanted to compare you to a female Jack Kerouac. Could you talk a little bit about travel, foreignness, and writing?
I lived abroad for several years, and that was an extremely important moment for me, long moment for me.
A five-year moment.
Went like a snap. And I wanted to think about what I had learned or unlearned in the experience of leaving home. And so I wanted to turn to a book in which I could set that as my principal task. What happens when you leave home, and how do you deal with other people who've also left home? Because the narrator of Motion Sickness is constantly meeting people who are also displaced away from home. And I think she says at one point that home only becomes palpable when you're not there. So we begin to constitute notions of home and our either Americanness or Germanness or Englishness when we are not there.
Absence makes the heart,
yes.
The American books that seem to be most yearned for by this particular narrator are books that, interestingly enough, became more popular in France than here. Things in the series noir, books by Horace McCoy, for instance. Can you talk a little bit about your fondness for them?
Yes, and I mentioned a Mickey Spillane novel as well.
My gun is quick. I was going to say swift.
I like the approach to language that these writers took, the lack of extraneousness, this concision that they used, and there was a certain directness in their approach to what they were doing. I also wanted to choose books that would always lead to a sense of uneasiness. There's a great deal of mention of spies, and there's a kind of subplot, or there's a pretense at a plot in the book, which would have one wondering, is somebody a spy, this character Charles, or is he not?
Well, the reader is threatened to begin with when encountering the McCoy title, I Should Have Stayed Home.
Yes, which was his novel about Hollywood, a terrific novel that's now out of print.
Which I'm going to have to find. Do you have a copy?
Yes, I have a copy.
Oh, will you mail it to me when you get back to your city?
Well, I
might
have to...
Will you have your people mail it to me?
I'll have my cat take it to the post office.
Will you have your cat Xerox it illegally and take it to the post office?
Something like that, yes.
It's a different kind of novel. Bulgakov. The thing that I found when I was reading this book was that Motion Sickness, published by Poseidon Press, was that there is a chain of consciousness rather than a stream, by which I mean that the associative process seemed very intense, very directed, sharply edited, that unlike travel books that simply take you three steps down the Via Ricorso to, Menudo Plaza, this travel book was operating not by location but by string of memory, and that in this way the book seemed to have an ulterior inner method. When I spoke to you on the phone last night, I'll let you remake the joke. I asked you whether you used a process that Harry Matthews calls logarithms, and you said...
I don't use... sometimes I have orgasms, but I never have logarithms.
Well, this threw me in completely for a loop, and I thought, well, I can't ask her how, in fact, this book is structured. But while I gather that it doesn't have the steel grid of a Ulipo novel, mm-hmm. that it is very consciously controlled and manipulated yes. in its understructure. Can you talk about that in writing a bit?
I take a theme, let's say, or I have an idea, and then I do use a kind of association, but it is very controlled. I want all the images to link up and to move forward and move the narrative forward. So it's and to advance the cause of whatever kinds of ideas I'm trying to discuss within a particular paragraph or chapter. So they all have to kind of, it's like clusters of images or clusters of ideas around a central theme for a particular page or pages.
It also seemed as if memory and translation were being compared, so that the word in French for bread,
pan,
becomes a kind of code word to enter a consideration of pain.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And how we translate, in a sense, all the time, we translate our experiences into memory. We translate from one language, one kind of language, to another. And nothing will be exactly the real, for instance. You can never get back to that particular moment, let's say. But to bring up Harry Matthews, he has said that all writing is translation. And I think that that's a very important point and something I think about a great deal. But I just wanted to say, in Motion Sickness, while it's a travel book, I really thought about it as a kind of anti-travel book. Because while she's traveling, she's also in a process of denying, in a sense, that she's going anywhere or that she is anywhere other than in her own mind in a certain way.
Oh, given who you are, I can't believe you resisted talking about travels with my auntie. My goodness, this stops conversation, and I feel like Dick Cavett in a horrible way, you know, interrupting for a pun, an awful thing. But the translation process seems also... how to put it, I read this book two or three times, actually, because it had for me the exhilarating and dislocating quality that travel has, I found. Mm-hmm. That quality being, I remember when I was living in Italy and saying in rudimentary Italian things like, I admire your dog. Wondering if the phrase, I admire your dog, might mean something preposterously sexual or obscene in Italian, and that perhaps when I went to buy cheese, that this might mean something different in the markets there, and this feeling of conceptual blur and not being sure that language is expressing the thing you think you're saying mm-hmm. becomes... miasmic in this novel, mm-hmm. so that no experience seems quite actual.
Yes, yes. And she will always be in doubt about whether or not she has understood what someone else has said or a gesture that she's noticed, or whether she can make herself understood to anyone else.
I would like you to do me the favor of reading the opening passage, which seems to me to be a masterpiece of small equivocations. This is Lynn Tillman reading from the opening of Travel Sickness, Motion Sickness, published by Poseidon Press.
Right. This is from the first chapter called Tourist Attractions, and it begins with a quote from Flaubert. "I am the fellow citizen of all that inhabits the great furnished hotel of the universe, Paris. I'm in my hotel room on the bed reading the portrait of a lady and nursing an illness I might not have. As I am unhappy, I might just be unhappy and not suffering from the flu or La Turista. But a French woman named Arlette has sent me a get-well card. She seems to take my illness seriously. The card has a Tibetan symbol on it whose meaning I don't know, and which might have significance if I did. Her concern might also be ironic, and when she appears at my bedside the next day, I can't read the gesture as graciousness or solicitude only, since I don't really know what she means. I both feign surprise at her visit and feel surprised, a mixed response for what might be a mixed get-well visit. She talks about adjusting to changes of all sorts, the weather, leaving one city for another, a friend's betrayal, the end of a love affair, some of which she knows I've experienced. Leaving a city, a lover, good weather for bad. I want to get back to my book, the heroine of which, Isabel Archer, has an end that must be worse than mine, something I've always loved novels for. I decide to leave Paris when I've finished it. There are Turkish baths, hammams, in Paris, which reminds me of Istanbul, but I try none of them, as I don't feel well enough to leave my hotel room, except to go down the street for some bread, or pan, as they call it here."
Lynn Tillman reading the opening passage from Motion Sickness, recently published by Poseidon Books. Now, for a book whose very final sentence is, "I'm not sure," one experiences, I think, every kind of ambiguity, ambivalence, uncertainty that one can manufacture in this book. And because of this interest in manufacturing misunderstanding, I became interested in whether you're fond of Jane Bowles, whose novel Two Serious Ladies seems to me to be also a protracted exercise in the misunderstood.
I'm very much interested and was very influenced by my reading of Jane Bowles' Two Serious Ladies. I think I first read it in 1973. And I was astonished by the way in which she went from one sentence to another, the kind of juxtaposition of ideas that she presented to the reader. And I don't think that my style is like hers, but I think that in the sense that she does this confrontations between people where you feel at any moment there could be a great chaotic outburst or something even worse happen. I think that kind of thing maybe is more directly.
Well, one of the differences between the two of you, since similarity and difference do both define, is that whereas Jane Bowles, in the process of the novel, seems genuinely bewildered to participate in the ongoing bewilderness she's describing, in this book, there's kind of a bifurcation between a character who is victimized by uncertainty and an author who's locating more and more and more examples of it mm-hmm. for her to be victimized by.
Mm-hmm.
So the author seems apart from part of the strategy of the book, whereas the narrator seems like the victim of its strategies. Call Sylvain Retranger.
We need you now. I hate to think of my narrator as the victim of some horrible fictional plot I've placed upon her. It is true, I think, that there is a separation between the voice of the text from the voice of the narrator in a sense, because you feel like there is a kind of control going on and a direction, while the narrator may not know that direction. And one thing that you said before about the dislocation of travel, and it made you remember that. When I was writing Motion Sickness, I very much felt that I was both the reader and writer of the book in a way that I've never felt before in anything else I've ever written. And I felt that I could make arbitrary moves. I could say, well, where would I like to go now? And if I were the reader... And this is not about pandering to the audience. I don't mean in that sense, you know. But if I were a reader, maybe I'd want to get out of this situation and just make a move, because one of the things that one feels in life often, I think, is that one can't move. One can't get out of a situation. And, of course, what travel represents is the ultimate leaving all the time.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that is the counterpoint to my suggestion. I don't literally mean one of those Pynchon-like narrators, the victim of some fell scheme, mm-hmm. Mostly because travel enables her constantly to elude mm-hmm. whatever gathering meaning mm-hmm. may be accruing around her.
It's kind of like every chapter has a door.
Right. But also because the narrative is sufficiently numbed out, connections are suggested and withdrawn simultaneously. So it's not even the kind of paranoid universe that people experience, but rather a universe of possible meanings if one had the energy or desire to pursue them. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, well, every chapter has a door, sort of like a world presenting innumerable rabbit holes to an Alice who resists most of them.
Yes, which is in a way the nature of fiction. Because in a way, what I was thinking about with Motion Sickness itself was that it's commenting on fiction and how fiction allows you to construct all sorts of alternative endings, entrances, exits, and so on.
I'm talking to Lynn Tillman about her novel Motion Sickness. She's the author also of Absence Makes the Heart, which... Serpent's Tail Press just brought out. It's a collection of her shorter fiction. Kind of an odd thing. Because Motion Sickness is composed of shorter sections, collage in its method, it also feels like an anthology. What was it like to put an anthology together, and did you find that your affection for pieces had radically changed?
Well, I don't know how much affection I had for some of them to begin with, but being rather ambivalent about
everything.
I felt very good about having a chance to have these pieces collected, because most of them had appeared in things like Between C&D Magazine or Bomb Magazine or Bikini Girl Magazine, where Weird Fucks first appeared, this short novel that I finished in 1978. So,
whose title alone won notoriety for Lynn Tillman.
Yes, yes, it's a hard title to live up or down. But I was glad that finally this work could be in a form that people could read. And I think one thing that I realized when all the pieces were put together, and it's not all that I'd written, but quite a lot of it, was that there was a certain kind of variety.
Mm-hmm.
Part of my project in writing is to try to write differently for different kinds of content, have different kinds of form for different kinds of content.
Now, you are variously grouped in two scenes which many people claim don't... How do you say this? You are grouped in with two groups of writers who those groups claim are not groups. One is the downtown writing scene, and the other is the so-called new narrative. Now, as a person that people ask questions to, as well as a person who asks questions, people ask me, when they ask me things, what is new narrative? And I say, well, I hear it doesn't exist, but I always ask its practitioners whether it's coming to exist. What do you think?
Well, I think why the term has come about is that there was a moment during the 70s, particularly, when there was a great attack on narrative, and that people felt that avant-garde writing, for lack of a better word, and I think we need a better word, ought not to be engaged in narrative and illusion. And I also participated in this kind of thinking more around film than around writing. So I think when you're talking about new narrative, you're talking about people who have, in fact, been informed in some way by these other notions around non-narrative, and yet want to return to some elements of narrative in their work, but keeping mindful of other stuff that they learned along the way. So it's not a return to the 19th century novel. It's not a return to realism in a certain kind of way. But it's an allowance of narrative after a time when narrative was seen as something really too traditional.
Do you yearn for the day when a simple story will seem like the most experimental thing of all?
I think that...
that day will never come.
I think the question of what is a simple story is... I have in one of the Madame Realism pieces that a story is a way to think, and that thought is contained within stories. We have too many examples of very brilliant stories as myths, as fairy tales, to make one want to say the story is a form that no one can use. I think that's a kind of foolishness. If anything, in postmodernism, what we're thinking about is how to use all these many different kinds of forms that are available to us.
I've been talking to Lynn Tillman, who seems both the anatomizer and the, what would you say, propagator of a certain kind of postmodern disease, motion sickness, her new novel, recently published by Poseidon, and Absence Makes the Heart, a book of her shorter and mostly earlier fiction, published by Serpent's Tail. And I want to thank you for being with us. It's been a great pleasure to see you here.
Thank you very much, Michael. I've enjoyed myself.
You leave here to go to the airport, don't you?
Yes, I do.
More. my associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The engineer is Bob Carlson. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
To the jungles you can go in books. To the land of ice and snow in books.
As you ramble through the pages, books will take you through the ages, back to days of old when knights were bold and books.
Books, 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 books. Books. Books can be funny too.
Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasure, friends in prose and rhyme.
Now it's book of the mouse. Pop.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.